Welcome to the Amateur Movie Review Hour. I'm Trevor. With me, I got Megs and I got Josh.
Hello.
Tonight's movie revolves around a conspiracy theory. Normally, what I would do is I'd research or do a little dive into some topic about the movie. I didn't do that this time because there's a shit ton of stuff in here that would take like up a lot of time. It would be pointless. We wouldn't even want to do the movie because I'd be speaking for a half hour and everybody would be bored and want to go home. So instead, what I thought I would do is I would ask you two what your favorite conspiracy theory or theories are. Like, which ones do you find the most fascinating?
Oh.
And
it's funny because I think that I do have some that I believe them, but that I like to listen to people talk about them. And I can't think of what they are. Because there are so many that people are constantly, especially right now, everybody's talking about conspiracies.
Yeah. It's a hot topic word for quite some time.
Yeah. And I was actually just reading a list of things that people believe are conspiracies, which I'd never really considered. Mm-hmm. Some people believe that the just the art world is one big conspiracy. That they decide what art pieces are worth in order to move money around.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of boring one though, but that's one that came to mind.
Okay.
Mine's a newer one that I came across. It's a thing, but it's more along the lines of the Mandela effect.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's
exactly.
Making me angry.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm like, for instances, there's what's one of them? The
it's the Shaq.
The Shaq movie.
It's the Shaq
that's
movie.
Supposedly,
Sinbad, who was as a genie, but he wasn't. Yeah.
People believe that Sinbad made the genie movie,
and they
believe that it exists, and they all believe they've seen it, and they think that it's a conspiracy that's being covered up.
Yes. There's that one that I saw this on another podcast. I don't recall which one it was, but it was a girl. She was like, she showed like a version of this is the Fruit of the Loom emblem that I remember with the gourd in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, they're like, no, that's never been one. These are all the ones we've ever had. She literally got a list from Fruit of
the
Loom.
With the cornucopia.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So she went through all of her clothes. She'd been, I guess, for like a year or two or something like that from what I remember. And then eventually she found an article of clothing that had it on it. And they're like, oh, that was this, you know. But the whole concept of behind it is that basically the government is doing these things to try to see how well they can control people by augmenting memories and things of that nature. So that's interesting.
So that the Mandela effect is not really the Mandela effect. They just added that name to it and everything else are things that really did happen.
Correct. But some of them tie into they're saying there's actually memory wiping that's going on, and they say that like certain events happen during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you like do the research of like maybe a powder keg that's building up before that, and then it kind of peters out, but that's not actually what happened, or vice versa.
Yeah.
So that one's interesting to me, but I mean, like you said,
there's the Paul McCartney one.
What's the Paul McCartney one? I've not heard that one.
Many people believe that he died.
Died before Abbey Road.
And that it is an imposter who's been they brought in a guy who looked like him to play him because they didn't want to upset the fans. They didn't want the band to fall apart. So the man living as Paul McCartney now is not.
I believe that's true, honestly. I got a weird one.
Because of Wings?
Not that. Like the Beatles make fun of it. So the four of them are walking across the road.
Okay.
Paul McCartney's wearing a suit with no shoes on, which is how they bury you.
That's just one of the things that
that's one that's of them. One but they've had quite a few things where they did it like that.
They also say that if you run one of the records backwards, they say Paul is dead.
Mm.
So there are like all these different things. I think there's also one of the album covers. Where they're all their faces, and I think, what is it? Paul has his eyes closed. Like there's something weird.
Or the quarters over his eyes or something like that.
Something else that would connotate death besides the crossing of the street thing with the shoes off. There are several things, but that's just people reading into it, and I don't think that Paul's dead. But that's just another major conspiracy theory. Yeah.
I was not aware of that one. That's some wacky stuff right there.
Why
Paul McCartney? But,
you know, it wasn't for no reason, though. There were reports that said he was dead.
He had been in an accident, and they accidentally reported his death. Yeah. All right. So all these people believe that he actually did die, and they just didn't want to lose their band. So they replaced him.
And then how much time, how much longer after Abbey Road was it when what's his butt?
He died after the Lennon guy. The Get Back album or whatever it was.
I have no idea. Like
the one where they do the classic like on the roof concert.
I don't know what year that is.
They had broken up and he had done his own thing. He died probably like a year and a half or two after that.
Was it the '80s? It was like the early eighties, right?
Yeah.
Like 80, 81 or something.
Because it was right around some other assassination attempt. I want to say
it would have been
near the Reagan.
Yeah, I think that would have been. I think that would have been 81. I'm guessing. I'm sort of just trying to recall my own.
Yeah.
Just basic him or U.S. history.
Yeah, he died in late in 80.
Okay. I know it was in front of the Dakota Building where they had filmed Rosemary's Baby.
Yes.
Yep, I know that.
Yes.
I have a couple favorite ones. I really enjoy the Flat Earth one.
Oh, that's just so much fun.
It is.
Especially the documentaries that show the people.
Uh-huh.
They're fabulous.
I'm very entertained by those. They have their own math and their own way of understanding how this earth is flat, and I hats off to them for really believing them.
Mm-hmm.
The one that I was really introduced to, I'm not going to say the JFK one because everybody's heard that one. Everybody was that's just a staple of being a U.S. citizen is you hear about the JFK assassination conspiracy theory from an early age. But there was an ex-English football player. He went by the name of David Icke. He turned into a sort of talking head about reptilians and the reptilian race and how they worked their way into the world government. And this was all taking place during, 2000, 2001, 2002.
Yeah, well, Larry King was supposed to be one.
Yeah, Larry King. Like, he's the individual who made the reptilian race are what compromised all the 1%ers of the world. There's supposedly video of Obama blinking his reptile eyelids sideways, not horizontally.
I do remember this one. I think he fell asleep watching V.
Sure.
And he was like, when you fall asleep when you're a little kid and you dream about things and you believe they're real, I think that he did that maybe on a drunken binger.
Sure. Mm-hmm. There may have been a lot of stuff that David Icke was on a bender for and then making up, but there were many people who were eating it up during that time, and it was also time of the internet, so that information was just exploding. The internet was getting faster, and you were able to put up more, more content quicker than before. So he definitely rode the wave of using YouTube in its early infancy stages to really spread his ideas and his thoughts. But those are just a couple I wanted to go over here. Because this one's full of it. Like, I found so much stuff. I even wanted to talk about Andrew Jackson and his big wheel of cheese. But there's just too much there to talk about, too.
Too much cheese. Like,
if you haven't heard that one, go and search the big block of cheese or the big wheel of cheese that Andrew Jackson and Thomas Jefferson each received. The Jackson one's a little bit more hilarious. The Jefferson one, not so much. But there was a lot of topic that I could have pulled from this movie, and I didn't want to.
Oh yeah,
because there's just a lot of it, and some of it's stuff that people have heard before. So.
Yeah, and I've read books on the subject, and there's still just so much stuff.
There's truth in it. Yes, there were Freemasons. There are Freemasons. There were an order called the Knights Templar, but just as every good conspiracy theory does, it uses factual stuff and then sprinkles in some
flavor. It's also a lot of myth. You know, it's like kind of a mythical, it's almost like a dragon story. You know, you have a lot of things that people hope are true and things that people want to be true. And unlike some conspiracy theories, it's actually a lot more entertaining. Mm. And it is kind of based in like fanciful story, long ago, and hopefully for some people they want it to still be around today.
Sure.
So it's the closest they can come to that the stories of yore that they hear that they heard as children, that this one could possibly be true.
Sure. And it, you know, and for America being a very for America in this movie being a very young country, to give it some mysticism, mm-hmm. to give it something to make it seem otherworldly.
Right.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yes. You want to punch up the story,
uh-huh.
get people excited in your product and for your new government that's going to be running this new land.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a couple things I wanted to touch on.
The end.
What is the Amateur Movie Review Hour? Before we began our podcast, the three of us curated a list of approximately 100 movie genres. We then fed that list to a magical random generator that we use to provide us with the movie genre. The three of us take turns choosing movies to watch that fit into the chosen genre. We then watch that movie and attempt to return bi-weekly to review and discuss that movie. The only movies that we have banned are Marvel and DC movies from the past 15 years. I am not a professional movie reviewer. I just love to watch movies and then review those movies with my friends and you, my fellow screen fiend. We are going to review National Treasure. The story is by Jim Koof, Oren Aviv, Charles Seegers. The screenplay was by Jim Koof and Cormac Wibberly and Mary Ann Wibberly. The director was John Turteltaub, and that's a T-U-R-T-E-L, not like the reptile, turtle. The actors are Nick Cage, Harvey Keitel, John Voight, Diane Kruger, the one and fantastical Sean Bean, who doesn't die in this movie, Justin Bartha, and Christopher Plummer. I forgot that he was in here, but he was in here for like the 4 minutes of the first 4 minutes of this movie.
That's why I think that he should be called the hardest working man in Hollywood before he passed. He worked right up until he died.
Yeah, I went and looked at his career and was reading just some of his biography, and I'm like, this motherfucker worked.
Oh yeah,
like, and he was doing stage stuff. Like,
oh, he,
and he wasn't even English; he's Canadian. Yeah. Like, I thought he was English the entire time until I read he was born in Canada. I was like, God damn.
He just, that man worked and worked.
Yeah, he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he did.
There are a lot of Canadians, though, who moved over to England.
Yeah, well, they are a Commonwealth. Yeah,
they are, and there are a lot of, especially you'll find a lot of actors who were born in Canada but grew up in England.
Yes, yeah.
A lot of them probably also went to boarding school in England.
Well, I would guess so. The runtime is 131 minutes. Josh, you want to tell us why you chose this movie?
So, because it's the best movie ever. That's why.
Okay, all right, all right.
No, it's... I mean, there's lots of ways to fit this into whatever category we have, but I was like,
sure,
this one's kind of a weak category to a point, you know? Unless you want to go into, like, German films, which is a lot.
Yeah, it's really, you know, heavy,
they're
either
silent or very loud. You know, that's the options you get there. But I just, as soon as I got a chance to put National Treasures in there, I'm doing it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And when there's a chance to do the sequel, I'm doing that one, too.
He saw a chance and he took it. Yeah, not going to blame you.
Yeah, I was like, oh, Kruger. Oh, yeah, there we go. Does she show up 20 minutes into the movie? Sure.
Yeah, she does. Hey.
Leading lady, though.
The stipulations were set out, and they were met. They met.
This has been my guilty pleasure, though, forever. Okay, I know it's not a great movie. Everybody knows that. But it just has, like, the air of adventure, like, all the history that's in it, you know, like, whether it's real or fake on some points, you know, like, some of it's fantastic.
Sure.
It's just a fun movie, you know? This was probably
all of it's fantastic.
Exactly, yeah. No. Well, this was the first like fun movie he did with Disney.
Yes. Yeah.
And
yes.
Then it was like, what, the Sorcerer's Apprentice, which was shit, you know? Then
yeah.
Even National Treasures 2 is kind of like, you're like, eh.
Yeah.
Because he started acting like weirdo fucking Nick Cage again. And because I watched it right after I watched this one. I just doubled I doubled down on it. I was like, oh, whatever. And that one's like, And hopefully 3 comes out soon. They've been pushing it, and he's getting bigger, so.
Who do you want to direct it?
Who do I want? Well, I don't care. I mean, it's not going to be the same guys. As long as it has some of the same production behind it, this was a lot of Bruckheimer.
Yeah, this was I think it was the executive producer, one of the executive producers.
They had quite a few movies together back in the like 90s and stuff. So
yeah, are you a fan of what they did with the series?
The series sucked.
I wasn't a big fan of it. Man. It didn't hold as loosely as this movie National Treasure held its plot together. The series did worse.
I don't remember who was in that. I remember hearing about it. Who was on that?
Nobody that I could recall.
The only person you would know is Catherine Zeta-Jones was the per se bad guy or whatever.
Okay. Oh, did she come in on the second one?
What?
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
In the show. Yeah.
I thought she was on the second movie.
Second movie was Ed Harris.
Yeah, I recall Ed Harris. He was the bad guy in that one. Yeah.
And then they introduced the mom.
I do love some Ed
Which
Harris.
Was Mirren. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that. I remember little bits and pieces about the second one.
Mm-hmm. They went to the Dakotas, you know.
John Voight's just the dream smasher and everything.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, fuck you, kid. You don't get adventure and shit in your life. You go to work every day. Life's depressing. He's like, but I want to find treasure. Fuck you.
No, do what I do. You don't believe in a dream. You work till you're 84.
Yeah, he's
no,
just a
dad. No,
he's a dream smasher dad in almost everything he does. You know. You want to be a male model?
No.
Your wiener hanging out.
Putting this movie back into the time when it came out, especially, you know, it was 2004 when this movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
I would view it as not a wholehearted, like full-on propaganda piece, but definitely like a, hey, we're America. Remember our fucking history, you know, let's fucking stick together as Americans and protect our Declaration of Independence. But that's no different than any movie that would come out, say, as anti-war. Maybe like, what was that? With Gyllenhaal and Jamie Foxx. Even though I think that was about the first one, not the second one. But still, it's an anti-war. It's an anti-war movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what, Jarhead?
Yes, Jarhead. Oh. Yeah. But it was about the first Iraq War, not the second one.
Yeah.
But it didn't throw it in your face that bad. You know, it didn't scream.
No, and I mean, everybody was still happy back then. It was right after 9/11. Everybody like still loved America.
Well, yeah. So it was.
I don't know, man. Because of the things he says when he's quoting, like you're like, oh, it feels like it's more of a, hey, let's stand up against the government, like kind of deal.
Yes,
yeah. Like, there was a lot of that.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. That's why I was hesitant to say that it was very super patriotic, like it would to be like, hey, everybody get together and against this.
It was actually ultra fucking patriotic. That's the thing, though. Sure, not like the concession of patriotic to where. Just jam behind your country no matter what. It was saying, hey, actually question it. You should. You're supposed to.
Sure.
That's your job. You're not supposed to sit there and lie back, you know, and just fucking let everything happen. You know, it's like, oh, that sucks. That guy's doing that? Fuck that guy.
Yep. It shows you that, you know, just doing a little research at the Library of Congress can help you rob any building.
This is true.
Well, you have to have that computer specialist on your non-existent payroll.
Yes. 2004. I like when they were later in the movie. We're actually probably, I think, about halfway when they were in Philadelphia and they were on the laptop in the truck doing a Google search or whatever.
Yes. Like, unlimited resources.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. I'm like, what? So you have like a a never-ending Ethernet cable.
No, they were just on Wi-Fi. They were in the ether.
Like, and we bought it back then. Like, I bought it back in 2004. When I saw their flip phones, I was like, oh my God, we were on flip phones back then. Yes. Like, I forgot that we were using flip phones.
I still had a brick back then. I had a Nokia brick with no pictures on it.
I had the Nokia. No, I had a Nokia flip.
I had a 2004. I think I had a flip.
I didn't get anything with text messaging until like 2005 or something like that.
But it was back when everybody had different chargers.
Yeah. So
if your phone died and you were in a place, like I was at my mother's house the day after my wedding, and I had texted people to come over and drink with us and eat with us because we had tons of food. My phone died because I had it off the, you know, off the charger all night. There was no charger that went with mine. Nobody had one because people weren't traveling with theirs.
Yeah.
And I just had a dead phone.
Yeah.
Couldn't let anybody in. Couldn't tell people how to get in. Like, it was just ridiculous.
I'm sorry, folks.
Yeah, like, I forget how stupid those early cell phone situations ended up when we suddenly became, you know, like, kind of... Like, that was my only phone.
Sure.
But they were terrible, though, those chargers. You know what I mean? Nowadays, fucking, you barely... like drop a charger on the ground. You gotta get a new one.
You don't even get a charger anymore with some phones. Some phones, they just be like, here you go. Have a phone. We trust you that you'll get a charger. They'll give you the US, like the USB cord, but they won't give you the actual block. Block anymore.
Oh yeah. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mine didn't come with that. And then I went out and bought a better charger that was longer because I needed something that I could.
And that's why they've gotten, that's what I believe they've gotten away from. Well, we're just way off topic.
Yeah.
But because there's been third party accessory makers that provide blocks like that charge faster and quicker and multiple ports. Mm-hmm. That the phone company was like, fuck it, why not? We'll just let those people handle it.
Do you remember when we had to plug our phones into the lighter in our car? Like, we had to get an adapter to plug into the lighter to charge our phones?
No, I don't. Like, oh, now, wait, yes, I do. Yeah.
Because now the cars have...
Yes. They have a... Mine does. Mine has a USB.
I have, like, five or six of them.
And I have a cigarette socket. But I also have.
I have a lighter
too.
I have a lighter in my car. I have a lighter. My car is a pretty new car, and it has a lighter in it still.
Hell yeah!
And it has a flat charger that you just set your stuff on. But it also has one plug in up front, and I think on the backs of each seat, you can plug in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm pretty set. If anybody wants to go out and charge later, just hit my car up. I'm there.
But 20 years ago, you were fucked. You were fucked if your battery died and you were in a car and nobody had any way to charge it. Yeah, I'm like, all right, well, pay phones.
Yeah, you look for a pay phone. You looked, and hopefully it had a good
receiver.
A good receiver, but hopefully it had a good phone book. So in case you want to look up, I don't remember my friend's phone. Well, back then we did know our friends' phone numbers. No, but once we started getting phones, we didn't. So then it was like, God, I hope their parents are listed.
Yep.
I need to call them.
I don't know anybody's number anymore, honestly.
I know mine and then my dad's.
I knew the landline at my mother's house that had been there for 80 years, but my brother recently got rid of it.
Oh, well, that does no good.
There's no landline. Now I can't call people when there's an emergency.
That's no good. Well, you guys want to get back on track and talk about this movie instead of...
Let's just change the subject. We're going to talk about cell phones for the next hour.
Cell phone chargers.
The history of cell phone.
How we didn't have chargers way back in the day.
The history from brick to flip.
Yeah.
And then the flat screen.
This movie's going to get spoiled if you didn't already know it.
Oh.
The movie begins with a young Benjamin Franklin Gates I don't remember this actor's name. But he is searching Grandpa Gates' attic, and the grandfather is played by Christopher Plummer. Grandpa Gates. Oh, don't know why that's there.
Grandpa Gates.
You don't know the little boy? He's from Mesa, Arizona.
Oh,
he's one of our own.
Well, I didn't know
that. He's a thespian from just over on the east side.
Oh, well. Mm-hmm. I never met him. I lived out on the east side, so
you
I never
didn't
met
know
him.
Him.
Nope, not at all.
That's
we.
That's
everybody knows each other out on the east side.
I thought so.
Chiron at the bottom of the screen reads Washington D.C. 1974. Grandpa Gates then proceeds to tell little Ben the story of Nathaniel Gates, Ben's great grandfather. I think it's great grandfather. Thomas Gates. Grandpa Gates' story is about the grand treasure that the Knights Templar had found beneath Solomon's Temple during the Crusades. The story further elaborates that the Knights Templar then moved that vast wealth to North America under a new group called the Freemasons in order to honor the Knights' history. But the story continues on, using some of the founding fathers of the USA to hide treasure so that the dirty English would never get their grubby little paws on our precious little gold.
Filthy reds. You know the best part about that beginning, though, is like the way Plummer tells that. Like, it's just like,
yes,
that's such good like storytelling, like yes. The emphasis, the like that's just really good.
Yes, I wish he would have been more in it. I wish he would have been like the narrator.
Yeah.
It would have been cool.
Or they could have had him at the end kind of in a Star Wars-esque ghostly.
No. Stop it. No.
Like when he finds the treasure, then he sees his grandfather and then his grandfather's great-great-grandfather and then some other person
and
maybe.
And then some short like, or little maybe, person.
Yeah, like so, yeah, a little tiny green person would be great. And then
Albert Einstein shows up for some
yes.
reason.
They're all waving. Yeah, that would, they really missed the boat on that one.
They did.
Mm-hmm. But I wasn't there to help.
Aw.
Mm-hmm. My vision.
So Grandpa tells a young Ben that the hidden clues were all lost except for one that was given to Thomas Gates on a stormy night in front of the White House in the year 1832, 5 years before Andrew Jackson would get his big wheel of cheese. The note reads, "The secret lies with Charlotte." Grandpa Gates shows Ben the symbols of the Freemasons that were incorporated into the American currency. Grandpa Gates' tale is interrupted by Papa Gates, played by John Voight. He admonishes his father for telling a fool's tale to Ben. Ben wants to be a knight, so Grandpa Gates knights Benjamin Franklin Gates. We smash cut to an older Ben, played by Nick Cage, who's driving a snow truck, the kind that has tracks, not wheels. He is accompanied by Ian, played by Sean Bean, and Riley, played by Justin Bartha. Some of you might know Justin Bartha as Doug from The Hangover. As he talks about some old explorers, suddenly the laptop that Riley has been typing on emits an alarm sound. The pair of snow trucks stop to investigate an area for an old sailing ship. Riley schools one of the expedition mercs on thermodynamics and the weather. When Ben detects something with his metal detector, and then he detects it with his ice pick, they found the ship named Charlotte. I think it's like a bell or something like that. The ship's a bell. Yeah.
Probably collision bell or something.
Yeah, a mustering bell would in any type of scenario. Yours would be just as valid as mine. Even somebody's wanting to ring it for the fuck of it.
If I can throw that guy off the boat.
That happened probably.
Ooh. Get off to Charlotte, the good Charlotte.
I recently had heard a piece of superstition. Some fishermen, when they're leaving their port to go and do some catching, like big fishers, like commercial fishers.
Big game fish.
Yeah, or that too. They'll throw one of their members from their boat and then like reel them back in to like symbolize.
That would be terrifying.
Well, everybody's on board with it. And
I
whoever
get it, but
their
gross.
Life, you know?
Like,
sure,
I can't
sure.
go in that murky water. I can't handle going into choppy, scary water.
It's because they get
water.
The first catch out of the way.
Yes.
So
yep,
it's, yeah.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, that's so. Scary.
Sure, but it's their superstition. So they all begin to excavate the ice from around the ship. Ben and Ian then descend to search the lower deck of the frozen ship. Riley is startled by a frozen corpse, and Ben is excited to search the cargo hold. Ian is disappointed that there is only gunpowder and not treasure when they enter the cargo hold. When Ben finds the frozen captain, he searches a small barrel that is under the arm of the captain. Inside, there is an extremely detailed tobacco pipe that holds another clue to the location of the vast treasure. Ben thinks about the riddle that has accompanied the pipe.
I love that. I need to think.
Yeah.
Walks away. Huh, that's interesting. Maps have keys. Legends. Oh, haul. That was it was so like, but it's like enthralling though. He kind of catches you in it with him. You're like, he's fucking right. Shit. It's like he knows the riddles. He knows what's going on. He's a master. He's like, no one can do this without me. Fuck you. You can't do this. You with your smarts and your unlimited resources could never figure this out. Stupid.
Ian wasn't the brightest guy in this movie.
No,
but he
was
though. Like, it was like, why are these both capitalized here, mate? Look at that.
He figured out one thing.
It's most important.
He figured out one thing in the whole movie on his own.
He did like seven though, man. He was he was top notch.
Oh, was he?
Top notch.
He made some poor decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That he was lucky he made those certain mistakes. Otherwise, he would have been shit out of luck a lot sooner.
Have either of you seen the Da Vinci Code or read any of those books?
No.
I watched the movies. I never read the books.
Okay. This movie has that feel of Dan Brown books in the pacing.
Wonder where, like, Dan Brown got it from.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I'm
stealing it from the holy duology.
Ben eventually works out that the riddle means the next clue is going to be on the Declaration of Independence located in Washington, D.C. Sean wants to steal the document, but Ben disagrees with that plan. When threatened, Ben lights a flare and throws it at Sean, who with a shortstop-like reflex snatches the flare, thwarting Ben's plan. However, the residual gunpowder on Ian's glove is ignited by the flare when he shakes the flare at Ben. Ian and his merc force make it out of the frozen ship while Ben and Riley hide in the smuggler's hold. Then the ship explodes. The merc force and Ian leave in their snow trucks. Ben and Riley have to walk to a nearby settlement. When Riley asks what the two of them are going to do about Ian, Ben replies in a very spot-on Nick Cage way, "We stop him." I'm not good at his impressions.
No.
Cut to footage of Washington, D.C., where Ben and Riley are leaving the FBI J. Edgar Hoover building. Ben is upset that the FBI will not take the threat seriously. So they are off to go see if they can convince Dr. Abigail Chase, who is played by Diane Kruger. Ben eyes an invitation to the upcoming gala at the National Archives. Chase and Ben have some history nerding out. Then the pair of men try to talk Chase into letting them examine the Declaration to prove the existence of an encrypted map on the back of the document that will lead to a vast treasure.
I love the euphemisms he uses, though. It's to find intrinsic and historical things of historical value.
Yeah, yeah.
Treasure.
Yeah.
Like, oh, damn, she's smart. Fuck.
When it is clear that Chase does not take them seriously, the both of them leave. Ben stands in front of the document in the National Archives and monologues to Riley. Ben decides that he will steal the document during the gala. Ben tries to convince Riley. So in turn, Riley takes Ben to the Library of Congress to explain why it won't work. But Ben has found a loophole by utilizing the preservation room where the document will be held during the gala. Riley has been convinced to steal the Declaration of Independence. There is a montage of heist preparations. Riley manages the camera and security. Ben is reading up on sensors in the case. He's making security badges. Riley uses a laser to heat up a thermometer, which he'll use later when it's taped to his camera. Ben mixes some black light reactive powder and water, and then Chase receives a gift from Paul Brown, a.k.a. Ben. And here's where Riley, posing as the tourist, uses his laser pointer taped to his handheld video recorder to trigger an alarm on the Declaration, which then causes the document to be moved to the preservation room. Chase is notified of the alarm, so she orders the sensors to be changed. Riley watches the video feed. Ian is also doing his planning to steal the documents as well. Or the document. Ben and Riley enact their plan on the night of the gala. Ben uses his fake badge to gain entrance. He then proceeds to the bathroom where he switches out of his plumber disguise into his tuxedo. And Ian and his men enact their plan as well. And if I were the director of security at that place, all those security guards would be fired.
Yep.
Why did you not notice the white collar beneath the coverall that he had?
I don't think they were paying any attention.
He was talking to somebody else when he walked in.
Sure, but when he was going through this the metal detector, I don't think he was talking to anybody.
Well, they're watching the little scanny thingy. You know?
There's always another one who's not watching the scanning thingy.
Nah.
They don't care that much. They're like, this is just some papers and some maps. This isn't some exciting stuff like the president.
Well, yeah. And they didn't listen to his advice to watch out for people trying to steal it.
Mm-hmm.
Still.
They're not, they don't care. They haven't, no, they haven't a care in the world.
Anarchy is all they care about. They don't care about the structure and order.
I think they do.
The amendments.
Ben and Chase flirt for a while before Ben leaves after giving an awkward toast. Using the black light, Ben collects Chase's fingerprints from the champagne flute. Ian and his team are getting closer to the document. Ben successfully lifts a fingerprint from the glass. Ben then gains entrance to the elevator using her fingerprint. As Ian and his team enter a secured area as well, Riley uses a video loop to hide Ben from the security guards, and Ben uses a black light to find Chase's password on the keyboard to the preservation room. He guesses the password correctly, which is Valley Forge, because she's a George stan. Ben steals the case with the document when Riley loses the video feed. Ian's team has arrived to the same floor as Ben. Ian sees Ben at the other end of the hall as Ben waits for an elevator.
I love the two heists going on at the same time.
Sure,
that was really cool because you got your one that's like this brute force, smash doors, you know, tactical thing, and the other one of this like MacGyvery, you know, all this fucking magic stuff. They're like, oh, get this and you do this. Magic fucking ink for the keypad. Ooh, like a little subterfuge where the other one's just like, break door, shoot guy with gun.
Yeah. You know? I do think it's funny that Chase is attracted to this strange man who basically sounds like a flat earther coming on in and telling her, hey, there's a treasure map. And she's like, oh, but he gave me this really great pin that I've been wanting.
He gave another pin and he said, he's like, it must have been really hard looking up all that history. Yeah. Finding that stuff, huh?
Yeah,
she liked that he gave her little props, and he owns a tuxedo. You know, there's that, and he's pretended to have some money that he donated. So she's like, "Oh, he's got a little money. It might be a little crazy, but
sure, he's got money.
He's got money. He pays attention to my likes and my dislikes."
Huh? Swooned. She swooned.
She swooned. Yeah, she's like, "You know, he gets me. Whew. He gets me.
Yeah.
We have a lot in common."
Was like Pennsylvania Dutch?
Yes.
She's like, no, Germany.
Saxony German.
Saxony German. Scheißenfeech.
When Ian and Ben make eye contact, Ian shoots him. Ben uses the case as a shield. The elevator opens and allows Ben to hide from Ian's gunfire. Back at the party, Chase is asking after Ben, who now uses the gift shop to escape her search. When he tries to leave, he is accused of stealing a full-sized replica of the Declaration of Independence. Funny enough, Ben doesn't have the Benjamins to pay for a copy of the Declaration.
Oh, yeah, you went there.
I got that one.
Beautifully done. Beautiful.
In sub-level 3, a security guard has an alert. Confident that he has escaped Chase, Ben makes his exit. Except that Chase happens to come around the corner to see Ben exiting, when she feels compelled to follow. She catches up to Ben, who is just feet away from escaping. Back in the preservation room, a head security agent gives a code red call. The alarm blares as Chase now yells for security, the stolen document safely in her hands. Ben and Riley escape without the document in hand. Ian has spotted Chase with the document in her possession, so the Merc Force abducts Chase, which leads to a pursuit. After a near-miss collision, a cut through an under-construction road, and the mandatory back doors on a van opening and swinging wildly to and fro with a passenger, Chase is rescued by Ben and Riley.
Apparently Kruger did a lot of those
stunts, too. Nice.
I was like, why?
Sure.
You can't find a blonde that looks sort of like you? That's weird.
Chase is safe, but she has lost the document to Ian and the Mercs. However, when Ian goes to remove the document from the plastic sleeve and unrolls it, it is revealed to be the replica poster.
The old switcheroo.
Yep, yep. Mm-hmm. Abigail shows concern for the document, but Ben reveals he switched the documents before handing it over to Chase. Enter Agent Sadusky, played by Harvey Keitel, who has arrived to the scene of the crime. We cut back to Chase, who is arguing against Ben and Riley about the document having a secret code or map to the vast treasure. Cut back to Sadusky, who finds out that Ben was the one who stole the declaration. That's why they can't go back to his house to decode the document. Sort of like a bleed into one. They're doing like an intercut, like,
yeah.
Sadusky is explaining who they're looking for. Then it cuts back over to Nick or Ben and Riley, and they're saying, hey, we got a room set up here, here, and here, but we can't go back there now, because then it cuts back to he used his credit card. We have a credit card slip for his purchase of this and that. So
shouldn't even have his wallet on him. That's crazy.
Yeah. That's why you always carry like $400 in cash on you.
That's right.
And fake IDs.
Yes. Sadusky finds some copies of Silence Do Good's letters in Ben's house, which leads them to think that he'll be heading to Philadelphia. While Ben ponders what to do, Chase tries to run away with the real document. But she doesn't get far and is able to talk her way into staying with the declaration. Ian is trying to figure out as well the next clue without the help of Ben. And this is when he figures it out. He's like, yes, these two words got big letters at the beginning of them. These other ones don't. And that's as far as they get in that regard.
Yeah, how did he think he was going to decipher the map once he got it with by killing? Like, at least keep him alive. That, sure. Yeah, that was ridiculous.
But Ben needs the letters of Silence Do Good. Sadusky's going to be looking for Ben wherever he could be. Next person they're going to be going to is his dad's place. And Ian is going to be heading towards Philadelphia to the Franklin Institute. Ben has to go to Poppy Gates' house to get letters of Silence Do Good because his dad is the owner of the originals. In hopes to sway his dad, Ben uses the Charlotte information to try and convince Papa Gates, but he still says no. Rather than give in to defeat, Ben and Chase use extremely basic chemistry to find the next clue, and they need to head to Philadelphia because everything's at the Franklin Institute, or the next clues are. And before they're able to leave, Papa Gates finds out that they stole the Declaration of Independence. Then Sadusky arrives to Papa Gates' house to find him duct taped to a chair. And he also has no information for Sadusky. So now we're in Philadelphia, where Riley is paying, I don't know, maybe like a 10 or 11 year old kid to go find each line, word, and then letter or page, line, letter for, I don't know, some like 40 odd weird ciphers that were on the back of the Declaration.
Would they call it Akhenaten or Akhenaten?
No, I don't recall the actual name. Like, it was some type of cipher. Like, I don't remember the actual cipher name. But Ian has arrived and figures out that this little kid has been helping Riley outside. So he follows Riley, or he follows the little kid in hopes to find either Ben or Riley, but he doesn't find any. And during this time, Chase and Ben are flirting as they change into casual clothes of the early 2000s.
Riley, she does the sexy toe kick. Do you see that?
Yes, yeah, like yeah, that. Yep, yep.
On the tippy toes and the other one up. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Swooning. Swooned. Full swoon.
Riley arrives to the clothing store where he informs both of them that the next place they need to go. But before he can finish the riddle or the answer, they already know that they need to go to Philadelphia. But they find the clue, but believe they're too late. However, Riley knows something that they don't know about daylight savings time not being invented yet. So they still have time to go to Independence Hall to try and find out where the next clue will lead them. And using mobile internet or Wi-Fi, the Merc Force is led to Independence Hall, because this is when they're out in their truck in the street. trying to find the next clue. At Independence Hall, the trio find a pair of spectacles atop Independence Hall. Ben has a moment at Independence Hall as he holds the Declaration of Independence. He uses the spectacles to read the back of the Declaration, revealing a hidden map to the vast treasure. The Merc force has been spotted cruising around, so the trio decide to split up. Ben goes by himself as Chase and Riley leave together. Both parties are pursued by members of Ian's Merc force. Chase with Riley take the Mercs through a market. Ben leads the other members through a graveyard. Riley finds Chase so they can continue evading the Mercs. Ben is cornered on a roof by a Merc guy named Phil. Ben escapes by tossing the cylindrical document case, making the Merc chase after the case. Meanwhile, Riley and Chase lose the Declaration to a one-step-ahead Ian. He is now in possession of the Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm. Just like when he tried to get that ring.
Yep. Ben is arrested by Sadusky at the rendezvous point. Chase and Ben arrive soon after, but escape without being spotted. The pair then retreat in order to formulate a plan. Chase wants to contact Ian. At the FBI building, Ben is threatened with prison or finding the Declaration and prison. And a light bulb goes off in Ben's head. He has the answer to his final clue. Ben receives a phone call, which is being traced from Ian, and Ian has an offer for Ben. They are to meet in New York on the USS Intrepid. In New York, Ben is being used as bait, and he's a bit cagey about it. Nope. That's two. I got it. The Merc force is watching Ben. They use a couple different tactics to cover Ben's escape from custody.
No, that fucking the scrambler scene where it's like, are they going to shoot him?
No,
is that what's going to happen? He's got a gun. Oh, my God.
I love the fact it's like, all right, that's not working. Bring a helicopter down.
Yeah.
Bring a helicopter down. It's like, what? That never would have... No helicopter would have ever been able to get that close.
No.
In New York in 2003 or 4, no. Whenever they filmed it. They yeah. would have shot no. it down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love it.
Well, they kind of... There was... In this movie, they didn't talk about 9/11, really.
They
did.
So they
it was
didn't.
Almost like it didn't happen. Yeah. You know, it was kind of like... It was very... Because, like, watching it... I wouldn't have thought it was so soon after because I was in New York not too long after. I was in New York probably the same time they were filming this movie. And it was a very different feel in New York in that area at that time. It was a very different feel. And in this movie, you didn't have any of that feel.
Yeah.
It was weird.
It you're right. It definitely did not feel like, New York,
yeah,
post 9/11. Like, it didn't have that, didn't feel like that when they were showing it at
exactly.
all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they left, you know,
any of it, really. Yeah.
Because I was in New York in 03, summer of 03. So it would have been when they were filming this.
Though. Sure.
And it
sure.
was, yeah. And even they were in DC and, in earlier in the film, and there wasn't that same. You know, they took out the Pentagon. They kind of that wasn't really a thing either.
Yeah,
and there like security was so up back then. So that was it was a very 1990s feel for the
sure.
for the security
sure.
wise. It was very 19 before before Timothy McVeigh. So before 95. So it was like an early 90s feel. Security wise.
I'd like to know if this screenplay was written before McVeigh.
Yeah.
Like, cause that does happen sometimes where scripts are written and they're just sort of sat on for 5-10 years, just waiting to get made sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd be curious to know when this was written. So after the helicopter and scrambler, Ben escapes from the custody of the FBI.
Because he's a master diver.
Yep, he's a master diver.
Yeah. Does he have some degree from MIT for something? And he's a master diver. Just so you know that.
So Chase and Ben discuss what happened along with how Ben will be protected if things go wrong because they've been reunited. Ian and Ben have to have a face-to-face before heading into the Trinity Church at Wall Street and Broadway.
Another thing that was very fake. You cannot get into that Trinity Church. You can't just walk in.
I bet.
There's a line to get into Trinity Church. It's a very long line.
Sure. I'm imagining it's probably one of the a tourist spot.
It is. It's especially in post 9/11.
Oh, sure.
That was
Isn't that one of the War of the Worlds churches in that movie?
I don't
know. Did they go in at the end?
Maybe. No? I don't remember anything about that movie.
It's about worlds and wars and stuff.
I didn't care for it.
Not the Tom Cruise one.
Oh, the original. No, I haven't seen the original since I was a child.
What is wrong with you?
It's not my thing.
What? You don't like to hear those weird wee. It's not even the right noise, but I can't do it.
I know what noise you're trying to do though.
And it goes.
Oh, that's
a little bit more.
Yeah, that's closer. Yeah.
Ian lets Ben know that the stakes are real by showing him that they got Papa Gates as a hostage, so don't fuck around, Ben.
The door gate's like, show him no, yes.
Yeah. Yes,
fucking the Euro trash fucking security guy or whatever. He's in everything. He's always the grunt. He's that guy.
And then the blonde haired FBI guy who was on Lost.
Oh yeah.
As the white
red.
He's in everything. Yeah. Pellegrino or something. He has a name. Like his name is the same as some sort of food or drink.
Well, I love it because it's also the guy. It's also the guy from Dexter, the surprise motherfucker.
Oh,
yeah. He's one of those guys when you see him, you're like, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
It's that guy. Yeah. He's been in everything forever.
Yeah. So the Merc Force, Ian, Papa Gates, Ben, Riley, and Chase all have a little investigation into the Trinity Church. The group then descends into the basement because they need to get to the grave of Parkington Lane, who's in, I guess, the name of a real person or something. And then a very enthusiastic Merc just busts open the stone mausoleum cover.
That was a writing MacGuffin. That's all that was. Because it's supposed to throw you off, Parkington Lane, to sound like a fucking, like a street name.
Yeah.
But you also go like, oh, no, wait, no, it's an actual name. And they kind of glanced over it. Because apparently that movie, the original one, The rough cut was 4 fucking hours long.
Of this movie?
This movie was 4 hours long. 4-hour rough cut of this.
God damn.
Yeah.
Like, so they spend an hour on every little, like set up, do it, something goes wrong, how do they escape? Sure.
Well, it's probably also some more ad-libbing, though, and things like that. Probably. Like some of them, you know.
Well, if there's a rough cut, I doubt there's ad-libbing.
I don't know.
Ad-libbing's for the action.
Is that for the living?
That's for the living.
So behind the in the spot of Parkington Lane, there is a hidden path. Everyone except two Mercs traverse the hidden path. Ben ushers his people onward, giving them positive encouragement.
What do you think the Mercs did while they were down there? Like, they're down there for probably a good couple of hours, and they probably heard screams of death too.
Hey, we should probably just leave, right? They're probably gonna die. We've got our money.
If we're here for like a day, I'm hungry. Like, do you want? If he's not here by 6 o'clock, you go get sandwiches. And come back
because I don't want a sandwich.
What's next door?
I don't know. I've got to eat light. Is it a salad?
Because it's the one, the European guy, so he's probably going to be a vegan. Yeah, and then there was the tall black guy.
There's a great Scandinavian restaurant not too far away, but I don't think it was there back in 20.
That's where they would have gone. That's where they would have gone, yeah.
Scandinavian.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
Yeah. They're like, you know what?
Little sandwiches and salads. Yeah. And
they couldn't read the sign, so they're like, let's go here. Yeah, it's the Mercos or something. It's probably not even a Scandinavian name. What is a Scandinavian? Oh, yeah, it'd be like Sven. Yogurt
Hans.
Oh, Hans is hoagies. Hoagies by Hans.
I just heard one the other day. What was it?
A Scandinavian name?
Yeah, a friend's wife has a Scandinavian name, and I was looking it up the other day because it's one of those things that you're like, what is? I thought it was German because she's from Germany.
Fluka.
No, it's Dagmar.
Dagmar. Oh, that's an old German name too. Well, I don't like. Yeah.
Dagmar's like, Dags.
Yeah, Dagmar. Yeah.
That means morning daughter. But although it is Scandinavian, it's very popular in Germany.
Oh, sounds like Scandinavian tampons or something.
That region is Scandinavia.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's also very popular in parts of the United States.
Sure. Well,
probably not now. But there was an actress whose name was Dagmar.
Yeah.
I'm just not familiar with her for some reason. I'm not.
Her last name escapes me at the moment.
She just went by Dagmar. Like, that was really? One name.
Okay.
She was like, like Madonna. Only Dagmar.
So when it comes time for Ben to say something positive to Chase, Ben just grabs her by the arm, pulls her in, and kisses her. The trailing merc then has a quip. The mixed group marvels at the centuries-old wooden dumbwaiter system. Some of the group do not want to descend down the old wood stairs. And wouldn't you know it, the old stairs start to fall apart as the group descends, and it is everyone saves themselves. One of the mercs, actually he's the first one to go, his foot falls through a rotted piece of the scaffolding that spirals down, and then he crashes through another landing further below him, which then just cascades into multiple failures. So jumping from platform to platform, most find safety on other sturdy platforms. However, there is an intense moment for Ben, and he's either got to save the Declaration of Chase, and he decides to save the Declaration. But Chase is able to survive because, lucky enough for her, there was a platform that didn't collapse underneath her.
Well, he said, "Do you trust me?" He knew what was going to happen. He wasn't going to let her die. He didn't give her up.
That was across your finger, though, because it wasn't a definite thing. It was like, oh.
He saw her acting. He saw her action on the car door earlier. He knows she can take care of herself.
Unknown platform. Doesn't matter.
Well, that's true. They're pretty rotten. You just saw a guy fucking rotten.
Barrel through fucking platforms and die.
They're pretty rotten. But she weighs a lot less than that guy. She's a very dainty lady. Very dainty.
Once all the survivors are accounted for, the descent continues. Ben is finally approaching what he has dreamt of finding his entire life. But before he can accomplish that, he has to solve one last riddle. Except the chamber is empty, and there is not any treasure to be found. Ian is very mad now, and he's going to leave them all to die if Ben doesn't give up the location of the treasure. So Poppy Gates now steps in to give the location of the treasure. Now that he has the answer he was looking for, Ian decides to leave the group to die anyways. Because if it turns out to be wrong, then he'll just come back here to find him and tell him where it really is. But he will never get that far. And as soon as Ian is out of earshot, Ben and Poppy Gates get to find another way out. They explain to Riley, who's the only one who doesn't know the history, that the answer was 2, not 1. Ben soon points out some areas of interest. It opens another door, and the group is then greeted by a ransacked room. Papa Gates gives Ben a I'm proud of you, son speech. Riley pipes in with a stark reminder that they are trapped some 100 feet below ground. Ben finds a stone dial of an oddly shaped hole inset on a wall of this room. And wouldn't you know it, it fits the pipe piece from the beginning of the movie. And it fits wonderfully.
The secret lies with Charlotte.
Yep. Ben inserts the pieces. He turns the dial, which then opens another passageway. This passageway leads to the vast treasure that belonged to the Knights Templar so long ago. A curious Ben finds an oil brazier that lights a whole bunch of other oil braziers. The light of the flames are reflected from innumerable priceless historical treasures, and it astounds everybody. Ben scares the caretaker of the Trinity Church mausoleum when they exit out of a separate hole that they went into. Agent Sadusky approaches Ben at the Trinity Church to discuss his future. It is revealed to us that Sadusky is a member of the Freemasons, one that still believes the treasure should be given to the people of the world. But Sadusky still needs a body to put into prison. And luckily for Sadusky, Ben knows exactly where that person can be found. Cut to Boston, where Ian is being arrested for trespassing. Then we cut to Riley, sometime in the future, talking about scheduling another opening, this one being in Cairo. Riley is jealous of Ben, so he speeds off in his Ferrari. And Chase is now dating Ben, I guess, and then gives him a map to something mischievous. Ooh.
Pussy.
Roll credits.
So here's my thing about the ending, and I feel like this would have been great. Instead of doing the scene at the mansion, because the mansion was Carol's or whatever.
Sure.
That's what, yeah, it was Carroll's. It was the guy that started all the shit, basically, in, like, 1745 or whatever.
Was it?
That's his real...
That was his house. That was the house.
Was that the guy who was in the carriage, who had the note of the secret lies with Charlotte?
Mm-hmm.
He started to tell him the story. He's like, the reason I picked this house, he's like, I don't care.
Somebody lived here, I don't care, blah, blah, blah. Which, I like that scene, but I feel like if they would have just done this, it would have continued the Sean Bean. If it would have said
died,
Sean Bean died two months later in prison. Like, he was still died in the movie.
Yeah.
On scene, but he would have died.
Yeah.
And you go like, show the house, but they got 1%. Show Riley driving away at the end, flipping him off or something like that. You know, like, I get it. They wanted it this way, but Sean Bean died.
Yeah, so, no. Like.
One other thing, in both these movies, none of the good guys ever have a gun, ever.
That's true.
Never touch a gun.
Yeah.
Not even for a second.
Yeah, and in a way, I enjoy that type of hero or protagonist. Because it's very easy to use a gun to solve a lot of problems.
Well, don't forget, this is a Disney film.
Yeah, I know.
So even the bad guys the bad guys used the guns, but they usually didn't really shoot anybody. They never really hit anybody.
And yeah, they were just like stormtroopers that couldn't hit broadside of a barn.
The people who died were falling to their deaths in that kind of way that...
It wasn't violent.
Yeah, it was like, it was more humorous. You know, yeah. But you didn't have any horrible, hateful deaths, really. Even Sean Bean's character helped the dad when he was going to fall, and he looked horrified when his sidekick thug guy fell, you know, to his dad. He was like,
you don't think that affects me either.
Yeah, and so I had a little trouble with him actually shooting at people, because I was like, I just don't think he's really that guy. I think he wants this treasure, but I don't know if he's a murderer.
Sure.
Well, so, he never shot at anybody, though. That was mostly his henchmen. Shaw was shooting at them at the car. It was the driver that was shooting at them in the beginning. It was Shaw that shot at him when he had the declaration.
Okay, I was thinking
he never shot a gun. Sean Bean never shot a gun.
But he did wield a gun. Yeah. At the end, he did threaten them with a gun. Yes. But
I think a lot of his things were always like, shoot him or you guys take care of it. It just didn't really make sense, because he really did need Nicolas Cage for all this stuff.
That's what henchmen are for. Like, you don't hire henchmen and like they are to be ordered around.
Yeah. Yeah, unless you're a true sociopath and you really enjoy the shooting, you usually have somebody else do your dirty work.
You got to keep yourself separate from the incident.
You got to keep it separated.
Yeah. Like Face Off.
Oh, yeah.
Another great Nick Cage movie.
Yes, I that's how I identify my loved ones still. To this day, I put my fingers over their face. They love it. Everybody loves it.
The hand dragged down, yeah.
Yeah. That's how they know it's me.
And that was the good. That was the good.
This new hairdo. Most people don't know it's me, but then I just reach my hand out and I gently run it down their face, and they're like,
"That was the good guy's move too." It's so weird and creepy.
Yeah, it's really terrifying. Yeah. I would not like that if my father did that all the time. I was just like, "Hey, Dad, I'm playing volleyball today." Okay, hang on. Let me put my fan.
Say goodbye to your father. Yeah. And he does that.
Like, imagine you have your friends over and you're like, "Hang on, my dad has to touch my face."
What if his hand was painted white though, and he gave you the mark of Sauron though? Just
Saruman.
One thing about Face Off, little trivia, is that it has both of Patricia Arquette's husbands in it.
What?
Yes, Nicolas Cage was her ex-husband, and Tom Jane is her ex-husband. Tom Jane was, I think he was in the prison.
He was in the prison.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I used to wonder when they got married. I used to think, did they meet on? Was she visiting Nicolas Cage, and she went to the set, and she's like, someday I might marry that guy after I'm finished with this one.
I mean, when you have options, you have options. That's what they say.
Yep. Well, that's usually how. I don't know. Hollywood and their relationship things are weird.
Yeah, very.
Well, Josh, You want to, you got a rating for this?
Oh, shit, do I? Let me go last. Give me a second.
Okay,
here.
All right. Megs, you got any rating, anything that you want to say before you give your final rating or your rating for this movie?
Yeah, before I give the rating, it is one of those movies that I like it. I've seen it many times. It's one of those movies that when it would come on cable or something like that, I would watch it.
It's easy.
I'm not in love with the movie. As much as I like Nicolas Cage, I like a little weird. I like to go a little weirder with Nicolas Cage movies. This is very mainstream for a Nicolas Cage film. I've never been a huge fan of Diane Kruger, mainly because of this movie. I did not like her casting originally, and I think she's kind of grown on me because this time it didn't bother me. But the casting overall was pretty good. I guess I would probably give it, and it's not a slight against the film, but I would give it 3 Liberty Bells. Not because I don't like it. I think that it's fun. It's just not, it's not going to get a 4 or 5 from me.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. This movie's easy. Mm-hmm. Right? Like there's not a whole lot of thinking you got to do. Yeah. You just put it on and you're like, you bet, Nick Cage, you just be you.
You
need take all the time that you want to think about how you get to the next clue, buddy. I'm cool with it. Yeah. It's not Nick Cage at his most like wacky.
Right.
You'd have to
he
go.
He does that in the second one.
Sure.
They let him Nick Cage in the second one.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
However, there's some Nick Cage in it. Like there's some authentic.
Oh,
Nick
yeah.
Cage. Well, it's all authentic, but you know, there's none of that. There's none of that like Face Off or.
You don't get the outlandish
Nick
Cage.
I'd watch it if it came on or somebody's like, I've never seen it. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, let's watch it. Let's do this.
Yeah. I'd have to give it, I'm going to give it two lanterns. Two lanterns.
Two lanterns.
Yeah. Like, the plot's sort of weak. That's it. Other than that, it fucking looks great.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, filming's great. There's good acting in it. Some of the jokes still hold up. Yeah.
I thought it looked great, too.
Yeah.
I have to say, if I just walked into a room, I wouldn't be like, this movie's 20 years old.
Yeah, the cinematography definitely holds up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Josh?
I don't know. Like I said, it's guilty pleasure for me.
Okay.
That's what it is. Right. Like, it's not a great movie.
Sure.
But still, just like the format of it.
Mm-hmm.
The pacing is great. The pacing is insanely good on this movie. You never go like, is this over here? What the fuck's going on? You know
true,
I mean?
True.
Like even the transition at the end where it's like someone's got to go to jail. You know exactly what's going to happen. You know, for the most part, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, he's gonna rat that fuck out.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna have to go 5.
Okay.
Out of 5. Declaration of Independence.
All right, yeah.
Beautiful.
All right. Very
beautiful.
Good. Very good. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, if you ever feel like it, or maybe not, you don't. Maybe this reminds you to watch it again. Go watch National Treasure.
I'll even throw a Dagmar on there too.
Oh, and 5 Declarations of Independence and a Dagmar.
Yeah. Very doesn't really cool. do anything because cool. it's foreign. It's more like getting a BAFTA or something.
Oh, well, I think that's still pretty prestigious in the British arena.
Whatever, those guys.
Well,
but as soon as I watched this movie, I had to jump to the next one because it's like, I mean, I've watched it a few times. It's not as good, but
it's a little bit more campy.
It is a lot more campy, yeah. It's fun, though. It's definitely, like, it feels, when you watch that one, the second one, it feels like there's more at stake. Weirdly enough.
Okay.
Compared to this one where it's like, we just need to find the gold and there's this dickhead that's trying to do it. If they would have just stopped, everything would have been fine. You know what I mean?
Sure,
like, hey,
sure.
Let's fucking just wait until the heat's gone. You know what I mean? To where in the other one, there's like, there's heat. There's actual heat, you know?
Yeah, a little bit more pressing. Feels like there's a little bit
right,
more at
yeah,
stake.
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool, very cool. So, brings us to our next segment, I guess. But, you know, instead of doing that, I've been thinking a lot this summer. And one thing that I've been missing.
What you thinking about, Trev? Tell us. Well, what stories you have for us, buddy? Huh?
The summer blockbuster.
Ooh.
The summer blockbuster is something that I've been thinking about a lot recently.
Independence Day. You're going to do Independence Day because you watch this? Is that what it is?
I like where your head went. It's not bad because it's in the same decade. And probably, I think, maybe a year after.
You're talking the 90s?
I'm talking the 90s. I'm talking a nice summer blockbuster.
Judge Dredd.
Pop quiz, hot shot. What do you get when you put a young Keanu Reeves and a young sexy Sandy and an old Dennis Hopper in a movie?
Oh,
you get a car.
Bus.
What is it called? Speed. It's called speed. Yeah. Freeway. same decade, wrong style of movie.
I heard Jeff Bridges talk about the scene where he dies in the movie, and he's like, because they look at Jeff Daniels. Jeff Daniels is what I'm missing.
Yeah, yeah.
He looks at the fucking thermostat, and that's where it's going to explode. And he's like, the face I did in that scene, I got from Roy Scheider, yeah. And he's like, it's that scene where he's throwing chum in the water, and then the shark comes, and then he looks over, and he just drops a cigarette.
Yeah.
He's like, and they were in a movie together, and he told him, he's like, just keep that face tight, and then just drop it. He's like, just keep it tight and then drop it. And that's your death face, buddy. That's your surprise death face. Man, I haven't watched this movie in a long time.
I know. And
I watch it whenever if it happens to be on, I will watch it. I will watch the shit out of it.
It is on Hulu. Let me recheck that again.
We shouldn't say Speed 2. That's fucking
Yeah.
You mean Cruise Control?
Jason Patrick.
Jason Patrick. Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Is Sandra Bullock in that one?
She is. Yes, she was contractually obligated for that film.
Oh, Keanu got out of it. He's like, I'm not doing your movie.
Oh, wait. Sorry. You can watch it on Hulu if you've got a premium subscription. Otherwise, it is available to rent on Amazon, and if you have a subscription to Stars,
yeah,
you can watch it. You can watch it.
What's the best Sandy Bully movie, though? Honestly, what do you think?
Ooh,
I'll say what I enjoyed her the most, and not necessarily her best movie.
$3.79 to rent
for me. I gotta go Demolition Man. That character she plays in that is like quirky and fun, and they're like talking about banging, but it's like, what are you trying to touch me for? It's more about the movie, but I don't know what it is. I love that stupid movie, and they push Taco Bell in it.
Oh, well, yeah.
I like her in Speed. I like her in Miss Congeniality.
Yeah.
I hate fucking Miss Congeniality.
Well, I know you do, but I like it.
I got a spot for it.
I think it's a fun film. I love Michael Caine.
Yes.
He makes me happy.
Is that what she was with, like, Bradford at that time?
Yeah.
Benjamin Bradford or whatever?
Who?
Benjamin Bratt.
Benjamin Bratt.
Yeah, he's in the movie. I don't know.
That's called Julia Roberts was dating.
That's called Julia Roberts.
That's called horse is called Julia Roberts.
Sweetest thing.
That's the movie that I chose to interrupt our rotation with.
All right, we're going to be watching some Speed.
Hell yeah, I'm excited.
I'm excited myself.
I'm going to drink a bunch of Red Bulls while I watch it.
I enjoy watching Speed.
Feel jittery and shit.
Got that little wildcat behind the steering wheel there.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. We may have to... The Speed episode will be a little while because I will be out of town.
Woo!
So if something goes up, it won't be Speed. It'll be something to just take it up. This episode will be out actually. Yeah, it'll be about 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh, it'll be fun. It's gonna be great.
Yep.
We're gonna have a great time with this movie, guys. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to this.
I'm excited. All right. Well, now brings us to our next segment, which is Give Me the Juice. Josh, what anything new with you? You've been reading something, you've been watching something, playing something, building something.
I've built shit in so long. I thought about building things, but I didn't build them. I've been watching a lot of like 80s and 90s like stupid movies like Meatballs and fucking just terrible shit.
Okay.
But that's not what I don't know if you're going to take this one or not, but went and saw Deadpool and Wolverine.
Hell yeah.
Fun movie.
Oh yeah.
I like two more, I'll say that. Wolverine steals the movie completely. Definitely. There's no fucking doubt about that.
Yep.
Like it's like Deadpool's sometimes an afterthought in that movie. But anyway, it doesn't matter. It's still good. The cameos in it are great. You know, they go to the next level, breaking the fourth wall. You know, it's like it's a fun movie. It was really good. Went and saw that the day it came out. That was really fun. So yeah, if you haven't seen it, go see it. You know, if 3 years from now and you hear this, go see rent it. Yeah, you know?
Do something to it. It's a great movie.
Maybe all the other stuff in the MCU's happening, like Marvel's, like Doomsday. Apparently that's Robert Downey Jr. now. So we'll see what happens with that. But that's a whole other can of worms to talk about.
Yeah. And
we're not gonna. So I'm gonna skip this on over to Miss Megs over there. What you got? What's juicing with you, lady?
Well, my juice is that I finally started watching White Lotus because everyone's talking about it.
Sure.
And I like Jennifer Coolidge. I think she's great. The cast. I'm only on the first season, so I'm on the first season cast, and I enjoy the cast, of course. I did not realize it was a Mike White show. That was kind of exciting because I didn't know he was the producer writer on the show.
Okay.
And of course he worked with Jennifer Coolidge in one of my favorite movies, Gentleman Bronco, which he played her boyfriend. So I thought, well, that must be why he cast her in this.
Okay.
They're probably chums. But I'm enjoying it. I think it's cute. It's one of my the things I like are I love resorts. I love mysteries set in resorts, especially in the summertime. So right now it's great, but I'm only 3 or 4 episodes in. So
okay,
I'll keep it going. I'll keep you posted.
All right.
Yeah. It's not like Fantasy Island where the island's alive and it's trying to take the souls of people or whatever. Like that.
That's the movie Fantasy Island, not to be confused with the wonderful television series that didn't really do that.
Or what's the Looney Tunes one? What was that? You remember that? Where they it was a Daffy and somebody else kind of play
I don't know what Montauban you're talking part. About. I have no idea what you're talking.
There's
about.
Like a wishing well on the fucking island. I don't remember. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't recall that episode exactly. I've watched a fair amount of Warner Brothers stuff when I was young, but
I watched the old ones. That. Like I didn't watch these newfangled ones. I watched the old ones that were from, the 50s and 60s that they played when...
I don't know if they were... I don't recall exactly what years they were, but whatever they were showing on, syndication over the air or whatever,
I was
watching that.
Duck's Fantastic Island, 1983. It was an hour and 18-minute long movie.
I've probably seen it. If it was...
Oh, it's him probably. And Speedy Rodriguez is like his little guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. His Hervé.
His Hervé, yeah. Nice. But it's all about there's like a wishing well or whatever, and then everybody goes up and does the wishing well, and then it kind of goes into a different story for everybody. Mm. So
very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, watch that too, by the way. It's awesome.
I'll write it down with my trusty pen.
Fantastic Island, Daffy Duck.
What about you, Trev?
I've been watching a show on Netflix called Decameron. It is set in Italy during the 1400s and during the Black Plague. It has like the weird feel of like Game of Thrones, but it all takes place in one villa. Tony Hale's in it. That's right. She was from Derry, yeah. The show from Netflix, Derry, or Derry Girls.
Derry.
Yeah. I don't recall any other names off the top of my head. Some quite young ones, but it's hilarious.
Okay, good to know.
It's quite hilarious.
My brother asked me about it yesterday, and I didn't know any. I didn't have any answers.
Did you watch The Willow?
No.
Josh, did you watch The Willow series?
Yeah.
So you know that barbarian guy who was
beardy guy. Yeah.
Yeah. He's also in Decameron on it too. Okay. Like it's funny. It's a. It's a comedy drama comedy, whatever you want to call it. Like
dramedy?
Well, sure, it could be that. That could be a tragedy.
That's the professional name.
Is it dramedy?
It's dramedy.
Okay. All right. Well, it's good. It's funny.
Okay. I would like to check
it
out.
It plays a lot of. It has a lot of the tropes. It uses, and it does. It has some factuals. Usage of like the times and what's going on with people.
Okay.
It was cool. It's funny.
I was going to text him last night and ask him what the title was he was asking me about because I wanted to look into it last night and I completely forgot.
Yeah. All right. Now we come to reviews. We don't have any. So, Josh, you don't have to read anything.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's good because he can't.
Because everybody's a coward out there. Give us reviews, cowards. You chicken shits.
And we. Your ratings are cool. Thank you for your ratings. We still have 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, so you know.
Sweet.
We're 1 for 1.
Yeah, those $2 bills I've been saving, paying off. Yeah, I've been handing them out. Handing them around town.
I knew it. so thanks for listening. I'm Trevor, and check you later.
Good night.